you on. He was elected director, and he invited me to come in and discuss the whole problem with him.
In Baltimore?
No, in New York.
In New York.
And I met with him. I suggested to him to pick out the leading educators in New York, in the country,
mm-hmm.
and organize them as the National Council for Jewish Education.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can come together once a year, not to decide things,
mm-hmm.
but to exchange information.
Mm-hmm.
He was opposed to it, because it would take away his authority. But after talking and talking and talking, he was convinced to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That the result is that he had the book here.
Yes.
Did I?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We organized the National Council for Jewish Education.
Uh-huh.
And among those who were, I think there were 23 people
uh-huh.
all together.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people.
As we go down the list of the National Council of Jewish Educators, the 25th anniversary, we see that the ones who are still alive, who were the founders of this group, besides yourself, were Alexander Dushkin. That's right. And Mordecai Kaplan. And Albert Schulman. Who was the other one that was, one other person who was still living. And Isaac Berkson. So these are the founders, these are the ones who are still alive, and I think this is a very, very interesting. Let me go back to a question that we have here. I think came across on one of the other tapes that when you came to the United States, that you had said that you brought absolutely nothing except mm-hmm. for the clothes on your back. Yeah. That was it. Now, the next question that's asked is, did the change in climate and food that you experienced when you first came to the United States affect your health in any way?
No.
None whatsoever. None whatsoever. When you first came to the United States, was medical care for your father or for yourself a consideration? And where did you go for
non-existent
when you came here? Where did you go for medical care?
Well, got acquainted with some doctor. We called him in.
When you first came to Pittsburgh, because the emphasis of this study is your life in Pittsburgh to some extent, where did you first live?
In Pittsburgh, Raymond. I lived on all colored now. Where the colored YMCA is now.
For the colored YMCA. It's in Wiley? That isn't
Wiley.
No,
that isn't
Wiley.
Uh-huh.
Well, what was it like? Well, tell me a little bit about the neighborhood, what the neighborhood was like when you lived there.
The neighborhood was nice. I mean, a little apartment on the second floor.
Uh-huh.
It was Jewish.
It was an all-Jewish neighborhood. And now it's an all colored.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And from there we moved to Adelaide Street.
Adelaide Street. How long did you live there?
4 years.
For 4 years.
In Adelaide Street, when we moved, it was on Heron Hill. See?
I see.
And it was a very nice neighborhood,
uh-huh.
but it didn't take long in that city.
I see.
And from there we moved to Beacon Street.
Uh-huh.
About a house on
Beacon
Street. And from there we moved to Bushville Avenue. Mm-hmm. Bushville, we moved to Beachwood Boulevard.
Beachwood Boulevard. So you have moved a number of times. Was
five
each
times.
Move to better your housing, or what was the motivation for each one of them? Was the proximity to the institute?
No. First place that you moved was the neighborhood change.
Yes, that's right. Uh-huh.
Adelaide Street for a quite number of years, and that neighborhood started to change.
Yes.
That's the way we moved.
But when you went from Birchfield Beacon or Birchfield to Beechwood,
from Beacon,
those were...
On Beacon Street, we had a nice home.
Yes.
But the children were bothering my wife.
I see.
So we had to sell it and move somewhere else.
I see. Now, on this subject of religion, because we're coming to another topic, when you came to the United States, did you think of yourself as a religious person?
In a certain sense.
In what ways would you consider yourself religious in the United States?
Neither Orthodox, nor Reform, nor Conservative.
Yes.
A Jew.
You considered yourself a Jew. Did you call upon God when life was hard?
Well, my conception of God is entirely different.
Yes, what is your conception?
You see, the meaning of the unity of God means this. You can split the atom.
Yes.
You can split the nuclear. See?
Yes.
But I promise it a force that you cannot split anymore.
Uh-huh.
A power that you cannot split.
Yes.
That power is the unity of God. That controls everything.
Mm-hmm.
It exists in everybody and everything. That particular power. That's the unity of God. And
so the part of us is the part of God.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, when you have that conception,
there
is not there.
Okay.
Who am I going to pray to yourself?
You didn't attend the synagogue during the time you were here. For a certain holiday.
Yeah. Sure.
But actually, you found your religion almost within yourself, didn't you? Because your self-study and your own interpretation, and that in itself would almost be a very fascinating lecture on an understanding of your religion, which I think I would like to go into.
They'll call me an apicurus.
Did I call you what?
Apicurus.
What's an apicurus?
One that doesn't believe in it.
Oh, okay. Well, it asks the question, if you would attend the synagogue in Pittsburgh, which one you join? Did you join any synagogue?
Well, I belong to the Institute.
The Institute?
Yeah.
The Young People
and
Synagogue.
And at one time I belonged to the Beth Shaw.
The Beth Shaw. But actually, the Young People Synagogue only started a short time ago, didn't it? About
10
years? About how many?
30 years.
Oh, so it was down on the hill when it first started.
On the old houses.
On the old houses. Uh-huh. Yes. So did you attend very frequently?
Well, I started there. I used to go there.
Yes. Uh-huh. What observances did you carry on in your home?
Well, we observed the Sabbath, we observed the holidays, and we were kosher.
Yes. Uh-huh. Okay, well, that's fine. Now, we're coming to the subject of occupation. And, of course, you told us the kind of work you did when you first came to this country. You actually started a study group and a school in Boston, and you were paid for this. You weren't paid. Well, how did you? You performed this free, but then you were living really in your home, and your father was providing you with whatever you would get.
And before I left Boston and returned it over to engage another man, I went out to France in Boston and I raised the money for his salary.
I see. And his was the first salary in Boston.
Right.
Up until that time, there had been no salary. Yeah. Maybe money was given to you for books.
Everything was great.
But then your first job that you received a salary for was your job in Baltimore. Chicago.
I was elected principal in Borough Park.
In Borough Park.
Borough Park is part of New York.
Part of New York, that's right.
And that's when I went to the seminar.
That's right. That was a part-time job.
Yeah.
Yes. And that was really your first earning job,
mm-hmm.
And there you worked, what, half a day? You worked out?
I worked there from 4 to 6.
From 4 to 6. And studied the other part of the day. There's a question, I don't know if you want to answer it, but if you could live this part of your life over again, what kind of work would you go into?
The same work.
But this is what I more or less assumed. There was no union, you didn't at that time in relation to this, and it became your life's work, which is the question. You see, many people don't go into a kind of work that they love and devote themselves to. The next topic is the topic of marriage. And
now, in Baltimore, I met, she was teaching at the Bendeley School.
I met her, and
we were engaged and we were married.
How old were you when you married?
I was 27.
27. And how old
was
she?
21.
And she was 21. And so that was, you married about 1911. And then you had known each other for how long before you married?
6 months.
For just 6 months. So it was really love at first sight, wasn't it? And it wasn't a prearranged, yours was truly a marriage of love. Did you or any of your friends or family marry non-Jews? How do you feel about this?
Well, I mean, to remain that way or to change the religion?
Well, I think that it would be up to the couple, whatever they would do.
Yeah.
It's a question after they marry, what will they do? Nobody knows.
During the time when Israel did not own its own land, it would have been real bad. But today, I don't consider it a calamity. That Israel already exists.
Yes.
And we are not losing anything.
Yes. I started with 21 members of the NCJE, and now it's almost 400. And it is an amazing kind of educational group to have started.
It's an educational group where you don't make any decisions.
No.
You come together and you discuss things with your members. You find out what this community is doing, what that community is doing, what are your plans, and so on. Very seldom do you have a lecture. It's very interesting. Now, last year I met in Israel.
Dr. Abrams went last year. And you learn a lot from what each group is doing.
Yes.
We had discussed about the concerts and that you said that you didn't particularly care for music, but your wife enjoyed it, and that you said you went with her to concerts. How about the Yiddish theater? Did you attend the theater? There was a Yiddish theater in Baltimore,
there was a Yiddish
wasn't there?
No. Not in Baltimore, but in New York there was. Where else? Chicago there was one.
How about the public libraries? Did you use the libraries to a great extent? Yes.
Especially in Boston. Boston Public Library is one of the best.
Yes. To go on to structured patterns and recreation, when you came to the United States and later on in your studies in Chicago or New York or Baltimore when you were working, did you join any organizations? Did you belong to a Talmud Torah or a Zionist group or labor group or socialist group?
I belong to the Zionist group from the start.
In Boston. Oh, in Europe. So you participated with that group. Did you belong to some organizations that were set up to give charity?
Well, I was a contributor.
Yeah, but actually your emphasis was the charity for the development of the Jewish education.
Right.
Now, when you wanted to have a fun, you know, if you wanted to take off and have a vacation, where would you go to have a good time?
Well, you mean after I was married?
Yes.
Atlantic City.
Atlantic City?
Yeah.
And did you, you both went, your husband, your wife, and you'd go for a week or two? And
sometimes a little longer.
Uh-huh. And did you participate in any kind of sport during that period? Sports was not a great interest
for
you.
In my field.
Uh-huh. One of the questions that was Joe suggested to me is that when you were young, were there problems of that generation that seemed like a challenge, and how would you compare the problems of this generation? How would they differentiate the kinds of challenging problems that you saw as a youth and the youth of today see?
I was already 17 years old.
That's right. But comparing it during the time of your childhood, your adolescence of the 17th, 18th.
There were problems at that time because if you remained in Washington, first of all, you would have to go to the army, you would have to join the army, and second, you would have nothing to do when you came back.
There weren't any jobs for you.
First, perhaps that would build up something.
But how do you look at the challenges of youth today?
Well, I think youth is in better shape today. I think, in general, they're more open.
Mm-hmm. And would you compare the youth of the group when you first started here? What was the year that you first started on the Hill? It was
1916.
So you've actually seen a generation of Jewish immigrants coming here, and now their children. And how might you, if you could try to compare some of the qualities that you saw in this immigrant youthful generation with the present, say, generation?
Those who came to the Institute, say, in 1916, were homes of parents who were still immigrants themselves.
From basically Russia and from the middle, from
the
Eastern Europe rather than Germany, is that correct?
Those who are coming now are American, from American-born parents.
Mm-hmm.
They themselves went to the, most of the parents, they themselves went to the Institute. That's where we got our children.
That's right.
See?
Yes.
But there's one thing lacking in some of the parents, that they didn't fall off their studies. See, they dropped out. The result is that they themselves are ignorant and are very anxious that their children should learn something. That's the interesting part. See, with the establishment of the State of Israel, there's a big demand today for Hebrew. There's a big demand for children to know something of their own. For the wasn't.
And the youth themselves, do they seem to the
seem to
students,
I
see where the parents have more enthusiasm
but
than the parents of the past generation. But what about the students? Are they enthusiastic? Are they hardworking or not so? They are, you feel. Do you think that the parents understood? Did you feel that your parents understood you? You mentioned how you didn't have a job, and do you feel that your mother and father, they did understand you?
Yeah.
And they appreciated what you were trying to do, or did you?
And they always
helped. One of the questions, again, that Joe was interested in, how do you remember the before and after of the Balfour Declaration? Of the reaction? What were the reaction of Jews before? We were talking about the Balfour Declaration.
Mm-hmm.
What were the reactions of Jews before the Balfour Declaration?
Well, the Jews always wanted Palestine. There was always a desire. There were prayers. You see, it's best to know what the prayers are.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, we didn't have any prayers. Prayers were the expression of the mind, what we wanted.
Mm-hmm.
so when, I mean, the early days of Jewish history, there were no prayers. There was only a short prayer when Moses prayed for his sister. And she was all covered with leprosy. He says, please God help him. Mm-hmm. And that's the only prayer we have in the entire in the entire Bible. There wasn't such a thing as prayer. And later on, when during the first Commonwealth, there were no prayers. There were sacrifices. And that held good for the second Commonwealth too. Up to 40 years before the destruction of the temple, there were no prayers. It's 40 years before the destruction that they started to build synagogues.
Okay.
They started to pray. And the prayers were, there were three things that they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
First, they wanted knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So they created a prayer for knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Then they wanted the rebuilding of the land.
Mm-hmm.
So they created a prayer for that. And the third one, they wanted the Messiah to come, the Messianic age. So they prayed a prayer for that. I mean, those are the prayers. They are not individual prayers.
Mm-hmm.
They are national prayers.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Mm-hmm.
That's the prayer we have.
Okay.
We pray, Honeinu mi'ichad de'yabina v'haskeh. Bless us with knowledge and understanding. That's one prayer.
Yes.
Then v'l'Yerushalayim yircha b'rachamim tashuv. And you shall return to Jerusalem.
Yes.
That's the second one. The third one is the Messianic age.
So the two of the prayers can say might be fulfilled,
yeah,
but not the third.
The third one will be fulfilled.
And you feel the third one will be fulfilled.
We are heading that way, see?
Why do you say that?
The atomic age will bring it about.
Uh-huh.
You see, according to the Jewish tradition,
uh-huh,
the world has to be either perfect for the Messiah to come, mm-hmm, or it has to be the other way too.
Mm-hmm.
Either way of
destructed.
Yeah.
Mm, yes.
Then the Messiah will come.
Okay.
But there is no question that there will be a Messiah.
Uh-huh.
And when that happens, there will be peace in the world.
Let me get ahead of that question. Yes.
Malachi, one of the latest prophets.
Yes.
That I'm going to send Elijah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to send Elijah,
yes,
before the big day will come.
Mm-hmm.
And he will bring peace,
mm-hmm,
between father and son and between nation and nation.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I'm going to strike the world and destroy it. And destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that Malachi prophesied that the day will come,
mm-hmm,
when another Messiah, type of Elijah,
mm-hmm,
will force the world to get together.
Yes.
And otherwise, there'll be destruction.
Yes. Well, I hate to think that the world's going to have destruction, but...
No, but
yes,
that's what's going to happen.
Yes. Let me go on as far as the next question is the kind of Jewish education. Well, of course, this is something that were there significant differences between the way you raised Dr. Abrams and your other son in America and the way you were raised in Europe?
The only thing is, in America, there is not such thing as studying yourself.
That's true.
For instance, when I was 14,
yes,
13,
yes, mm-hmm,
I studied myself. I mean, everything that I did get,
mm-hmm,
was through my own effort,
mm-hmm,
even interpretations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Here it's different. Here you go to school,
mm-hmm,
and the Dalton method was never introduced.
The what? The Dalton
method.
What's the Dalton method?
Dalton method that they study yourself.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, there is such a method.
Yeah.
And that's a difference. Sort of whatever they got, they got from school.
Yeah.
And once they were out of school, sometimes they stopped, sometimes they did not. Neither one of my children stopped studying.
No. Mm-hmm.
Even the younger ones.
Mm-hmm. But they didn't study by themselves at the age of 14.
No.
This they didn't do. Do you remember having any difficulties in raising your children which were due to the fact that you were an immigrant, that you came? This wasn't, this had never was
never
a problem
been, no.
for you.
No.
As a, and you told me when you acquired American citizenship, you told me 1914,
yeah.
I believe. And when did you first vote?
Same year.
The same year. And to what party did you belong?
Democrat.
The Democrat. Why?
Because I felt that they are, that's the party.
Uh-huh.
And I studied both parties,
yes.
And I decided.
Who was
Democrat.
That? Do you remember who was running for presidency in 1914?
Don't recollect who it was, but Teddy Roosevelt.
Well,
Teddy Roosevelt. Yeah.
Uh-huh. What prominent Americans of this period stand out in your mind?
Well, I mean, the prominent Americans, Americans or Jews?
Well, let's first ask Americans and then let's ask Jews.
Well, I mean, you had Roosevelt. That I knew.
Mm-hmm. How about Jews in your mind? Who are the outstanding Jews?
Well,
would you say?
Brandeis was one. Little Marshall was another one.
You say your boss from Baltimore. See who's from Baltimore. This, wait a minute.
Fenderly. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Or didn't you think he was so?
He was.
Yes.
It was outstanding.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And what's his name? The treasurer of the United States,
Morgenthau.
Morgenthau.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is, Morgenthau came to visit the school.
Did he?
Yeah.
How was that?
Not here.
No.
Came to visit the one on the hill.
Uh-huh.
He and Strauss.
Who Strauss was who? Who was he?
What's his first name? Milton Strauss.
Yes. He was a resident of Pittsburgh.
No. He was a resident of New York. He was a very rich man.
I see.
And Nathan Sprouse and Morgenthau and Bill Marshall came to visit the Hebrew Institute.
Okay.
And I knew them well. They, they were really surprised what they were doing then.
Uh-huh.
And at that time, Morgenthau told me the story.
Uh-huh.
You don't want to.
Yeah, that's all right.
He said when he was sent to Europe to feed the people in Warsaw. To take care of him during the war.
First World War.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And while he was walking in the street, he noticed a man with a really long beard reaching up to his knees.
Mm-hmm.
So he stopped him. He said, Rabbi, what stood in with our board and the gate spot?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing happened. Didn't tell him. 2 days later, he walked in the street again, and at this time, the man walked over to him. He started to curse him. Mm-hmm. The beef of our children here. Them talk with him with your flesh.
Yeah.
What's the room is my board, kind of misloving me. Like a rapping field, don't worry, field. Yeah, I cannot
He
sleep.
Thought it was going to be Samson and Delilah and
yeah.
someone was going to come and cut his beard. Let's see, do you, about now we come to the attitude towards Negroes. When did you first see a colored person?
Colored person, I saw him in Boston.
Yes. And what did you feel that they were different from the people you knew?
No.
Did any colored people work for you?
Yeah, they still work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. did you know any colored person very well, aside from being the employer?
No.
In what way did you know them? You've never been a personal friend of a colored person. Now we come into the subject of friendship patterns. Who were the people with whom you first became friendly?
Educators of banks.
Mm-hmm. Were you friendly with any non-Jewish people?
Didn't know them.
Even in Pittsburgh, would you say this is
well,
true?
Well, I mean, friendly with the president of the Fidelity Trust.
What was that, Fidelity?
Bank.
Oh, I see.
I gave him advice many times and he made money.
I see.
Mr. Reed, he used to be the president.
And did any of these first friends remain lasting friends, those few years that you were in high school, say in Boston, or when you were in Chicago, or in New York? Do you carry on these friendships?
Yeah.
Not especially.
Besides with the National Council.
Yes, the National Council, you still see
Dushkin,
a schoolman been here at all? Yes.
Yeah.
And do you, for example, are the friends that you made in Pittsburgh how are they as far as your friendship? You still see one another. During these first 5 years, did you maintain any contacts with people in Europe or any other parts of the world? And what were these contacts?
With people in Israel.
With people in Israel?
Yeah.
You mean you had friends who had left?
Well, Magnus
Russia.
Was there. Magnus was there. Dr. Magnus, my correspondent.
Was he from your town? Was he from? No.
He was from New York.
Yes.
There was a rabbi in New York. And he became the head of the university.
Yes, I know.
In Israel. And I had students at the university.